Speaking of money, the cover of New York Times Sunday Magazine, it's a white backdrop and almost like a Christmas tree of riches with rich people climbing it. You see a picture. The issue is titled The Issue with Billionaires. You get it? There are more of them than ever, and the whole U.S. economy lives in their shadow. Story editor for this piece is Willie Staley at the New York Times Sunday Magazine. Hey, Willie, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Good. Fascinating idea, fascinating reporting, filled with tasty anecdotes. So it's everything America wants. Well done, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
What's the underlying issue here? I mean, is it, to me, the question that I've carried around of late is the increased number of billionaires in this country. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I know they're fascinating, but I can put my fascination with that on the shelf and not worry about it if you're going to tell me that the proliferation of billionaires is not a symptom of some other larger problem.
And you want to, you want my take on whether
you to fix that problem for me.
Well, what I can say for sure is that most Americans don't have a very clear opinion on this. According to Pew Research, there's not vast majority, but more than 50%, or around 58 to 55% of Americans don't really have an opinion on whether billionaires are good or bad for the country. What I can say for sure is that, there's certain processes that have taken hold in our economy. I'm not an economist, but this is what the report tells us, that, that have created wealth inequality, and that wealth inequality has created a lot of billionaires in the process. That's what I could say.
So they are a symptom of something. But, I don't mean to marginalize their brilliance or their efforts or their opportunism. I mean, I presume we would also say that these people earned it. If the system is a little skewed in their favor, you're not saying they did it illegally. They played fair and square by the rules we have in place today, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I think that the Forbes list, for example, is mostly people who are entrepreneurs. There's actually not quite so many massive fortunes that are inherited in this country as you might expect. Entrepreneurs represent the majority of the list, at least in the United States. So, according to the rules laid out, yes, they have earned it. Now what you think of the rules is a different question.
Yeah, well, agreed. Keep going.
Some of the big inherited fortunes are the Mars family, the Waltons, sort of, we know those, and those are pretty high up on the list. But if you go to the top 10, for example, those are all, not to a person, but just the vast majority, are large fortunes cast off mostly by the tech industry. So you have, for example, Bezos and Musk, but also a lot of Google billionaires and others in the mix as well.
What your reporting or your colleagues' reporting says about black billionaires is interesting, too. In a country, you write, where the median family wealth for black households is $24,100, and the median white household has nearly eight times that. There are still eight black billionaires in America, according to Forbes. You know most of their names: Oprah, Jay-Z, Tyler Perry, Kanye West, Rihanna, who's a resident of the U.S. anyway. And you all make the interesting point that it is a strange fact of this country's economic system that the most common way for black people to become obscenely wealthy is to first become obscenely famous, whereas the Bill Gates of the world weren't famous first. They were, industrious, clever, smart, built a fortune, and then became famous. I'm not saying one is right or wrong, better or worse, but there does seem to be a dichotomy there, doesn't there?
Sure. That was not my piece, but that was Blair McClendon, who's a very talented writer, actually, I work with. It is kind of interesting. Blair was interested in the fact that billionaires like Kanye West and Jay-Z are so lashed to what they've created. They haven't made their money off the music, per se. They've made businesses that like Kanye West has Yeezy, for example, and Jay-Z has a cognac company and a couple other things. And he has a nightclub here in New York. But those, the value of those assets, those companies, is so lashed to the persona that they've built through their music that it puts them in a sort of uncomfortable position. And that was the thing Blair was really interested in.
Yeah.
Whereas you're right, it's someone like Gates, though there are people, you know, the top of our list, Elon Musk, for example, not our list, Forbes list, the list we all share, and Bloomberg, to be clear. Elon Musk is, you know, he's sort of oddly lashed to his company's fortune, his persona, rather, is lashed to it in interesting and sort of novel ways. So it's certainly not exclusive to the rapper billionaire, but it is an interesting dynamic that Blair got into there.
San Francisco is now home to 81 billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
There are almost two per square mile. You have billionaires like we have Starbucks, for crying out loud.
It's pretty crazy. And I mean, it goes to show how good Silicon Valley has been at sort of producing the vast fortunes. But it has been really warping to the city, you know, as anyone who pays any attention to San Francisco knows. It's quite striking. It's the highest concentration anywhere on Earth, higher than Shanghai or New York or Moscow or anywhere else, according to WealthX, anyway.
What do you think of this interpretation of billionaires, though? I don't think they are as happy. There must be tremendous diminishing returns because all of us want to get a lot of money and buy boats and houses or, you know, live the maximum enjoyment that we can. But you can do that on $10 million or $20 million, pick a number, but it's not a billion. So the people who work relentlessly to get $1 billion seem to be driven by something else. Was that fair to say?
That sounds right. You know, something Pierre Paulden, who's the wealth editor at Bloomberg, told me, this didn't make it into the piece, but I thought it was interesting, is I asked him, you know, do you ever talk to them about is it ever enough? And one person, he wouldn't tell me who, but one of them said, what do you mean enough? What's that? Like, what's enough? You know? And his point and your point too is that they're driven by something more than just the money. And it's not as though they're just you know, most of them are tied to a company that they founded. That's something they really, you know, like it or not, something they're really into and something that has become incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, so they're growing something they love, but it creates these crazy pockets of anti-democratic power. You know, they're driven and they're attached to these companies, and then they end up so wealthy that they can flick their wrist and do, you know, whatever they want. So it's certainly an interesting situation.
Crazy pockets of undemocratic power. Yeah, I think that's an unavoidable consequence of this. You didn't say that that's a bad thing, but I think it is. you do point out that Jeff Bezos's wealth is not all cash. In fact, he's only got, what is it? How many billions of dollars is it in cash? I would still go to my ATM a lot, take out a 20 and go, wow, $7 billion. But, cash is, there it is, 15.6 billion.
A measly 15.6 billion.
You know, my favorite little chart or graph, though, is the average full-time Amazon employee made $37,930. The average full-time Amazon employee made $37,900 in 2020. In order to accumulate as much money as Bezos, $172 billion, an employee would have to start working in the Pliocene epoch 4.5 million years ago when hominids just started standing on 2 feet.
This is like Australopithecus, if you remember that one. Yeah, it's sort of around there.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We would say, human, yes.
Yeah, that's it. You know, to be fair, that is assuming they aren't investing in the market, but also aren't spending any of it. But yes, that is, it's the gap between Bezos' wealth and the average American's is kind of mind-boggling. So Mona Chalabi had a lot of fun with that. I really loved that spread of illustration.
Yeah, I did too. Although I don't know what interest rates were in the Pliocene era, but you do think, to be fair,
I don't know if the S&P returned back then, but you know, we can assume 6% or so.
The rule of 72 over 4.5 million, if you just put in $100 a month, you're going to have some real coin at the end of the day. It's just fascinating, and it's really well done. And I appreciate your agnosticism about are they evil or good, because I know they're a little of each, but I do think it is a red flag that we have so many billionaires in this country right now.
Yeah, Yeah, and you know, anyone with any political convictions can find billionaires who agree with them. The fact of the matter is that we've just created, you know, I guess as I called it earlier, these little spots of incredibly concentrated power where we're subject to their whims. I mean, if you look at what Elon Musk just did with Twitter, for example, that's he could just buy 9% of a company that he wants to get a board seat on and then decide he's over it, and all in the course of a week. And that's just, you know, you don't normally, you know, I mean, there's always been stuff like this, but the concentrations are very, very extreme and like nothing we've seen before. And it's a little destabilizing. And even if it's hard to even understand what's going on and where the lines are.
And they're not controlling railroads anymore. They're controlling information, which is an even more valuable commodity. It's something to think about when you read the latest Sunday edition of the New York Times Magazine, The Issue with Billionaires. Dude. I'm out of time. Willie, keep doing the good work. Thanks for your time today, and pass along our appreciation to your crew over there.
Thank you so much for having me on, John. Good talking to you.